All right, here we are. So welcome everyone. This is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. I am super excited about today's interview. I have Chuck McGee with me today. Chuck, how's it going, buddy?
Fantastic, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it is. It's my pleasure. Chuck is a breathwork specialist, breathwork coach. Is that, I guess, what term would you use to describe what you do?
That's so breathwork specialist is what's been bantered about, so okay. We kind of go with that.
Perfect. And so I'm gonna just real quick before I let Chuck take over here, just so people know, listening, my own kind of personal journey and how I came across Chuck. I started doing the Wim Hof breathing methods probably been about like 5 or 6 months ago. And not quite that long. It was right at the beginning of the pandemic, because I remember Wim had a special on his course, on his fundamentals course. And I was familiar with Wim Hof. I'd heard of him. I think a lot of people in the fitness community and stuff have. And, you know, I'd heard of breathing and all this stuff. And okay, yeah. I knew the importance of good breathing. But my buddy started doing the Wim Hof course, and he started telling me about, like, man, there's something here. Like, it's really interesting. I'm, you know, I've got these long breath holds and I feel different, and the, you know, the cold showers are different, all that stuff. So I started looking into it myself, getting into the Wim Hof method. And about that time, you know, I'd done it for a few months, and then the book, Breath by James Nestor came out, and highly, highly recommend that book. And that book really spurred a fire, lit a fire into my butt to really start figuring this breathwork thing out, because me personally, my nose is jacked up. Man, I've you know, slammed it into the ground a few times. You know, so I was just down the typical pathway of, you know, snoring, starting to experience a little sleep apnea, and it was really starting to bother me. Like, I didn't want it to become a problem. And so reading this book, Breath, it gave me some hope, like, oh, wow, we can actually change this through the way we breathe. And in the book, he mentions Chuck. Chuck was the person who taught him the Wim Hof method, James Nestor, the guy that wrote the book. And so he'd mentioned him on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast interview that he did, and then I read about him in the book. And so Chuck unwittingly became a little bit of my breathing guru. So I tracked the guy down, sent him an email, said, hey, brother, let's do a consultation. I want to pick your brain. And he's been nice enough to follow up with some other info, and I'm getting him on the podcast. But in some ways, I think this is one of the most important podcasts I've ever done, because the breath work, proper breathing, and then doing like focused breath work can have specific effects on the body. It's transformational and it's fundamental. It underlines everything that we do. And so I'm super excited. Like I said, in some ways, I think this is the most important podcast I've ever done, because getting people tuned into what the importance of breath work is, what it is, and how they can help improve it, I think is going to help more people on a more fundamental level than almost anything that I've introduced the mountain biking world to. And so I'm super pumped to have Chuck on to be the guy to help me do this and introduce people to this. So with that said, Chuck, I'm actually interested in your origin story, my friend. Like, how, I know a little bit about it, but I'd like to know, how did you get started personally on this pathway of becoming a breathwork specialist?
Well, it started about 6 years ago, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I was a bartender for 16 years. I've worked in the theater and film industry for about 20, 25 years. So I was really familiar with high stress, high output environments, the need to perform under stress, 300 people yelling at you, wanting something. And I was stressed out from that. I didn't have very many good ways to handle the residual stress when I was done with my job, still being upset from the night before or something like that. And during all that, I became a type 1 diabetic due to an autoimmune response within my body. They're still not exactly quite sure why I became a type 1 diabetic. Just one of those things, they said, you know, that's fun. So I'm type 1 diabetic. I'm managing my illness, but I'm not really living. I'm just kind of subsisting. And one Monday night, a customer comes in high on drugs and will not leave the bar until I look up this silly hippie granola thing called the Wim Hof method. And that was my thought at the time. It's this granola. What are you talking about, breath? That's so ridiculous. I go home and, you know, I kept my word. I watched the Wim Hof Vice documentary. And in the documentary, he guides the guy through a couple rounds. So I just basically rewound that a couple times and did it and felt great. I was like, wait a minute. How can I feel this good from just this? Talked to my wife the next day. We bought the 10-week course and I really fell into that. A few months later, I'm not on blood pressure medication anymore. I'm taking less insulin. I don't have to take Valium anymore to help regulate my mood because of the big swings from the blood sugar swings. And like, as you said, it just how impactful it was. I thought, you know, this is something I want to do. I signed up for an advanced course and I kid you not, I stumble into instructor training. There's an advanced Wim Hof course in LA and I get there and they're like, welcome to instructor training. And I'm like, come again. And they go, didn't you read the description? No, I just signed up. And they're like, this is for people who want to be instructors. Okay, let's do it. And that December, we went to Colorado, got to learn from Wim and an amazing gentleman called Casper Vandermeulen. And that's when I became a Wim Hof Method instructor. Just kept going, kept pushing. And now I teach the Wim Hof Method. I'm certified in Oxygen Advantage and the XBT Performance Breathing. And I just love how impactful the breath can be on the body. Even all of these elite athletes, they're so strong with their mental fortitude, they can push past all of the stress they create within themselves, but it doesn't have to be that hard. If they have a good foundation of your breath, you can just do so much more. I mean, I'm a 6'2", 260-pound diabetic, and I can climb snowy mountains in my shorts. Like, that's mind-blowing to me. And if I can do it, if a type 1 diabetic who's just been not in the physical fitness world his whole life, I'm rather new to this, can climb mountains with this, what can people who are actually elite athletes do with this?
Yeah. Yeah. And we were actually talking about this yesterday, because one of the things that really shocked me when I started diving into this more was realizing how dysfunctional my breathing was. And yet most people would consider me to be a pretty high performing athlete, you know, doing mountain biking, doing jujitsu. Like, my gas tank is never one of those things that most people, when they think about me, is like, oh yeah, James needs to work on his gas tank. And yet, like I said, when I started checking, you know, my own breathing, realizing like, wow, I've got some dysfunctions here, and realizing like I'm actually causing, you know, it's hard to say like more harm than good when you're exercising and doing these things with bad breathing, right? Because it shouldn't be an either or, but you're definitely not getting all the benefits that you could, and you are actually kind of like, it's like the old analogy of like trying to drive with the parking brake on. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, release the parking brake.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I'm looking at the breath work now. It's like, man, you know, you can perform at a high level, but if your breath work isn't where it needs to be, it's not efficient. You know, your CO2 tolerance sucks, all of these things, then it's like performing. Yeah. You're getting there, but you got the parking brake on and you're doing a lot of damage to the car in the process and making it way harder on yourself. And so, yeah, just like it's like I said, man, like breath work done properly, it's transformational, excuse me, on a bunch of different levels. And, you know, like I said, I love your story because it really, the thing about Wim and the Wim Hof Method and stories like yours that I really like is how it challenges what we think we know about the human body and what our capabilities and capacities are. And how on some level, science, as much as it has helped us, it also kind of limits us because it tells us you can't regulate your immune system. You can't, you know, do these things. So, I guess, what are some of the things, I guess, that you, like, when most people are thinking about breathing, what are some of the common things that they don't realize when it comes to breathing or breathing dysfunctions? Or things that you know, if they did realize, they'd be like, oh, wow, I need to pay attention. I think a lot of it's just ignorance because people don't realize a lot of these these things. And I'd like to know kind of what you feel some of the main ones are that people should know about so they can understand the importance of it more.
Well, the biggest one is don't breathe with your mouth. I mean, there are times in scenarios where it's absolutely necessary, but those are few and far between. Breathe through your nose. Take a proper diaphragmatic breath. Now, and I'm not saying to all you elite athletes out there, please don't think that today, if you close your mouth and start breathing through your nose, you're going to be able to do the same thing that you've been able to do with your mouth open. That's just simply not true. Your nose is an underused muscle right now, if you're not using it properly. It takes time to build that muscle up, excuse me, and in about 6 months' time, you'll be able to do the same things with your nose that you're able to do with your mouth now. But it takes that time. It's not something that can happen overnight. I've had clients who start breathing through their nose and they try and go running and they're like, I can't do that. I'm like, okay, but did you try walking first? Can you walk breathing through your nose? Do you sleep breathing through your nose yet? Do you tape your mouth at night? And that's the big one is take that proper biomechanical breath. Because I when I see people say, you know, I take a deep breath and they take that breath, it's through their mouth, just to the top of the chest. And they go, that's a deep breath. That's about a third of your capacity. That deep breath, you know, you can put your hands on your bottom two ribs. You take that breath in through the nose. Feel that lateral expansion. And as you exhale, feel that lateral contraction. Now you have that diaphragmatic breath. That should be every breath you take, should be that nice, deep, full breath. It moves the blood out of the bottom of the lungs and gets it to mix like it should. It's way more efficient. And if you don't use those muscles properly, as athletes know, they don't develop properly and you lose some of their function over time. So
yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
So it's just important to make those small shifts, you know, stop breathing through your mouth and start breathing through your nose. Tape at night so you're not breathing through your mouth when you sleep, and give yourself a break when you catch yourself breathing incorrectly, and don't be like, damn it, why'd I forget? Well, the average person is breathing 20 to 25,000 times a day. The amount of reinforced muscle memory that creates is astonishing. So to break that habit takes focus and work. And I catch myself breathing incorrectly, and this is what I've dedicated my life to.
Yeah. No, it's a process thing. And that's definitely one of the things that just in training in general, just telling people like, man, don't beat yourself up. You know, mistakes are an opportunity to get better, you know, sort of thing. And that definitely goes with the breathing, because you can drive yourself nuts. Because like you said, you take, was it 25,000 breaths a day?
20 to 25,000. That's the average. Now, the average used to be lower, but people's breath has become so deficient that they just raised the average rather than address why it was going up.
Don't you like that? It's like when you walk into the store and all of a sudden mediums are the old smalls and large, you know, it's like they change the size of the clothes rather than address the fact that people are getting bigger.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the nasal versus mouth breathing, and this is one of the things that I don't think a lot of people realize is, well, why does it matter? Like, who cares how you get the oxygen in as long as you're getting it in? What's the difference between nasal breathing and mouth breathing? I know the difference, but please explain to people who don't.
So that's a super solid question, and I'm going to start with, if I open my mouth and I take a breath in, it's actually harder to activate the diaphragm. It's not impossible, but it's just not as easy. And it goes straight into my lungs. It's not conditioned at all. It's not filtered at all. It just goes boom into my lungs right away. And on a hot day, on a sunny day, you're going to put sunscreen on to protect your skin. And that's about 6 meters squared, of space. Or no, not 6 meters. That's 18 feet. 6 feet squared. Sorry. And your lungs, you've got about the space of a tennis court in your lungs with all those areolae and bronchii. And if you're not conditioning the air, that's just hot air, boom, or cold air right to the lungs, and it's hitting them. So that's a stress right there. And as you exhale, you're getting rid of more carbon dioxide than you should be. So many people think carbon dioxide is this bad gas and it's all about oxygen. but CO2 is so important. If you don't have the right amount of CO2 in your system, your veins and arteries are constricting. Your heart rate's going up and your blood pressure's going up. So this is more stress and more work for your body to perform. But by closing your mouth, breathing in through the nose filters the air. It conditions the air. It takes moisture out or puts it into it so it's as good as it can be for your lungs. Your immune system scans the breath as you breathe in through the nose. It doesn't do that through your mouth. So your immune system is already figuring out what you're bringing into your body. There's a gas that's only produced when you breathe in through your nose called nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a vasodilator. So as you're breathing through your nose, it's introducing that to your bloodstream. It's opening your veins and arteries, lowering your blood pressure, and lowering your resting heart rate. So right there, just by breathing through your nose, it's more efficient and more relaxing for your body. Now, as you exhale through the nose, because you'll hear people say in nose, out mouth. No, in nose, out nose. When you exhale through your nose, you reclaim a lot of that moisture back so you can stay hydrated longer, perform longer without dehydrating as much. That's huge for people on distance and endurance rides. Keeping that breath through the nose so you're keeping a lot of that water and you're not exhaling as much CO2. You're keeping that saturation where it should be. Now, the more you work out, of course, the more CO2 you're building up in your body because the more energy you're expending. And that trigger to breathe is not a lack of oxygen. It's an abundance of CO2. And that's why you want to train your CO2 tolerance to be a little higher and a little higher so you don't get that tight, I'm gassed out feeling. So if you're training this and you're breathing through your nose and you're like, oh, I have to breathe, it's okay to blow off a lot of CO2 with a mouth exhale, but then switch back to nose breathing. It's just more efficient for your body in the long run. In the beginning, when you're first training how to do this, it's going to take time to get used to breathing through your nose. So if your nose is clogged up, a great exercise you can do is exhale, pinch your nose, nod your head like you're saying yes to someone. And when you need to breathe, let go, take a great big nose inhale, and it should help clear your nose. You might have to do that two or three times, but it helps. Now, this isn't the magic key for everybody. Like if someone like you, you've broken your nose a couple times, people may have a deviated septum or another physiological reason they can't quite nasal breathe, you're going to have to bring a doctor into this too. But most people should be able to, over time, switch to exclusively nasal breathing and just relax their body. I mean, when you think about it, breathing through your mouth, most of the time you're doing that, that's high performance. That's right at the red line for like peak output. But we can't sit at the red line forever. So by practicing the nasal breathing, exercising with it, you can actually push your red line further away and keep moving those limits more and more and more. But
yeah,
it's just less stress.
Yeah, I can certainly attest it takes a little, work with that, but like my nose was jacked up and it is the difference between today and where it was just a couple months ago is profound. And so, the body will adapt to what you ask it to do. And really the thing that the breath book really made me understand was how humans are made for it. Like we're made to breathe through our nose.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And so not breathing through your nose has a ton of negative consequences because it's not what we're made for. It's not what we're designed for.
It's not what your respiratory system is designed for.
Yeah, but exactly.
You said something I'd like to touch on real quick. You know, the nose can adapt when you actually use it, but the converse is true. If you haven't been using your nose for a while, it has adapted to being unused.
Yeah.
So it is like, you've trained your body to perform a certain way, and it's by no means denigrating people who, are these top tier athletes who just haven't ever been taught how to breathe right. That's not, I can't be like, ah, dang you. I mean, you're achieving amazing feats with just your willpower and the ability to push through this stuff. And I just like to say, you know, it doesn't, as you said, you can put that parking brake down, man. It doesn't have to be so hard.
Yeah. No, man. It's just getting people to understand the importance of it, though. It's one of those, the problem with getting people, it's the low hanging fruit. It's the easy things. You know, people want this real fancy thing. And that's the other thing I'll say with breath work. Like, it is transformational, but it's not rocket science. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, you pretty much covered, like, breathe through your diaphragm, breathe through your nose. Like, there's some basic things, but once you do these things and you apply them properly, that is transformational on so many different levels. And, again, like with the mouth breathing, again, that's something we were talking about yesterday, is how one of my big insights from doing the XPT breathing certification was how they talked about, like, your breathing being gears for your effort. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you shift and, like, mouth, you know, like, that's like, you know, a top, like, you know, gear five, like, you know, at the top end. And so, you know, do we really need to be in gear five for every effort? You know, and that's the thing, like, people just train themselves, like, as soon as they start working, they automatically shift into gear five with their breathing, even though their body's in, like, gear, you know, two or three. Mm-hmm. And this disconnect is causes problems. Like you said, it actually, like, makes it, you know, makes it harder for your cardio and endurance to be optimized. So the idea of using the nasal breathing and mouth breathing and understanding how these things work is kind of like gears for your effort and matching your breathing to your effort. It really, like I said, like, one of those big, like, light bulb moments for me that was like, damn, dude, why didn't anybody explain like this before? Cause that makes so much sense. Cause most of the time, and this is something you talked about the first time we had talked, was, you know, you're saying, like, you know, normally when you're riding your bike, you want to have, like, a rhythm of, like, you know, four breaths, you know, four, breathe in to four pedal strokes and out to six pedal strokes. And then when you see a hill coming up, well, you know, start going like 4-2 and start, you know, breathing faster to oxygenate the system and start blowing off some CO2 in anticipation of the workload. And usually what we do is we get on the bike and we're riding the bike and we start climbing a hill and I wait until the hill, until it's hard.
You and respond then I start, instead of anticipate.
Exactly, man. Dude, one of my favorite things that you say, and I'm totally stealing it from you and I will give you credit.
Please do.
As hard as I can, is you are the pilot, not the passenger. Mm-hmm. And that right there, man, that's such a powerful statement on so many different levels. But, like, the understanding, like, I'm using my breathing so I can be the pilot of this thing instead of just being the passenger responding to what's going on. Again, it's one of those things that once you make that connection, it can really change your performance on a bunch of different levels. But yeah, would you mind talking a little bit about, I guess, kind of the, like, that idea of using your breathing as gears and kind of matching it to your effort level? I like the way that you were explaining it yesterday or Monday. I guess we talked Monday, too. It's been such a long week. Sorry.
So in nose, out nose should cover about 80 to 85% of your output. And you can change the speed of the inhales and exhales to increase or decrease, you know, the amount of energy you need. Just letting it go a little quicker is, you know, going to build that energy. Exhaling a little longer is going to help relax you a little more. And knowing what your breath does, I mean, experiment and play with it and be like, okay, so if I'm breathing in and out through the nose and I exhale longer, I can be a little more relaxed. Now that'll serve you, say, on a nice straightaway. You've got it easy. Relax the body, build up the CO2 in your blood, really dilate those veins and arteries so you're getting really good blood flow. You see a hill coming up. All right, I know I'm going to be producing a lot of CO2 because my muscles are going to have to perform. So I'm going to blow a little bit out, but I don't want to get rid of too much because if I constrict too much, everything's going to be harder. So I find that point where I'm exhaling through my mouth. I'm building up that energy. I'm like, okay, I feel good. I'm ready to hit this. You start going up that hill, and what's counterintuitive is as you said, people are going to start mouth breathing, but you're not at gear five yet. That's like in nose, out mouth is 85 to 95%. of your activity. And that last five is in mouth, out mouth, but that's not as efficient as people think it is. Taking these quick breaths, there's dead space between your mouth and your lungs. About 150 milliliters of air gets lost with every inhale and exhale. No matter if I'm taking a nice long deep breath or a short, quick rabbit breath. So 10 short, quick rabbit breaths, I've just lost 1.5 liters of air. And say that that inhale is only 450 milliliters of air. I'm losing a third of that to lost space. I'm getting rid of too much CO2, so my heart rate's going up. And now I'm using oxygen more just to be where I was at before. So when working hard, if you can train your body to relax into that stress and not try and push through it, you relax into that stress as you're going, you slow your exhale down, you kind of allow your veins to dilate a little more, your CO2 tolerance is a bit higher, and when you hit a certain threshold, your body's going to release a lot more oxygen to your musculature. That's what happens when there's a high abundance of CO2 in your system. So if you have an SpO2 meter, you might see your usable oxygen drop, but it's being used by your muscles. It's just not available in your blood. Yes, you're going to have to get that back. And you can get that back by blowing off a little more CO2, building your oxygen tolerance back, and then allowing it to drop into your system again. But it's becoming aware of these things by switching those gears as you need them, knowing that there's dead space, knowing you want the most efficient breath for the right output. So those 10 breaths in that 10 seconds, that's 1.5 liters of lost air. I take two breaths in that time, but I'm taking 750 milliliter breaths, really filling everything up. I'm only losing 300 milliliters of air. And I'm getting 1.2 liters of air absorbed right away. Just because you're breathing quick doesn't mean your body's absorbing it at that rate. It just means you're breathing fast and you're reacting to your body. You're not anticipating the needs that could come from it. And I'm not saying I'm perfect at this or you're going to be perfect at this on day one. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of concentration. But once you get to that point, you can anticipate what your body's going to do and relax into that stress. And that's why we like to do the ice baths in the Wim Hof method. Beyond all of the other health benefits that that gives you, by sitting in something stressful, like an ice bath, accepting that that's going to stress your body out, and then training your brain to meet that stress with a nice, calm breath, you're now changing the way your body meets stress. Instead of meeting stress with that tension, that quick breath, you're now training it to relax. And now you can see clearly. That fast breath isn't indicative of a calm mind. I don't know many people who breathe quickly and are calm. I mean, ask any kid who's freaking out. They're not going to be able to talk to you calmly. Slow it down. Now tell me what happened.
Yeah.
And by knowing what gears you need to be in, yeah, there's an absolute time for gear five, but it's not as much as we think it is. And at sometimes when you're driving your car up a hill, you don't shift into fifth gear. And on mountain bikes, you guys don't shift into higher gears when you go up a mountain. You shift into a lower gear. And that's what you should be doing with your breath as well. Now, I'm not saying in a race, slow down, relax, and, you know, go at a nice comfy pace. Yes, you're going to have to push yourself. But the shifting into the top gear, they say you're not supposed to do this, you know, in a car, on a bike. Marathon runners, they're not shifting into high gears. They may be breathing a little quicker, but they're not breathing all out. That would exhaust them.
Yeah. Even look at like sprinters. I mean, you don't see like Usain Bolt running down the track going like,
no.
You know, yeah, he's got the appropriate gear. Like he may do that when he's done for a second to like blow off CO2, but then he's downshifting his breathing just as quickly. So Yeah. That fifth year should be reserved. I like the way you put it. You know, life and death, like something's chasing you or something like that.
Oh yeah.
That. Like
So the gears, as I put it, you know, first gear is just normal everyday life. Second gear is out, like high output. I go four gears. Third gear is, you know, really need to perform. You're pushing yourself into the fight or fight. That's probably in nose, out mouth. And fourth gear is, holy crap, I'm being chased by a bear.
Yeah.
Like that's, and if people aren't conscious of their breath, breathing through their mouth all day is like being chased by the world's slowest bear. You're still stressing your body out. You're still raising your blood pressure, raising your resting heart rate, and you're not doing yourself the service of just breathing correctly. Slow it down, extend that exhale, and look for that pause between your breath. People breathe too much. It should be, you know, in four, out six, with a natural 1 second pause at the end. It's relaxing. A longer exhale throughout the day tells your body to relax. You know, just ease off a little bit. Breathing through your mouth all day tells your body to stress. What would you rather be telling yourself? And that's unconscious. That's just what your breathing is telling your body how it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. It triggers the like diaphragmatic breathing, like you were talking about earlier, triggers a more of a parasympathetic response, and mouth breathing triggers more of a sympathetic response. I mean, we're wired that way, you know, because if we're breathing through our mouths, we should be being chased by a bear.
Or
chasing that bear, right? Yeah, it's like, man, you're doing this real quick, but the rest of the time, you're going back to the nose breathing. It's kind of like, you know, with the Wim Hof method, that's one of the things people will say, because Wim would just be like, just breathe, motherfucker. Whatever hole you want to get it in and out of will work.
Absolutely.
But
that's only for 20, 30 minutes a day.
Exactly. Yes. That was my point, was, you know, the rest of the time he's not breathing like that. He's doing nose breathing. In fact, I started doing some humming since we talked last time. It drives my puppy nuts, man. He thinks I'm like losing my mind or whatever. But yeah, just like the, you know, the humming is one way to, one, slow your breathing down. You can't hum with your mouth open. You can't hum with a quick exhale. And so it's kind of a way to auto-regulate those two things. And then it also, like you're saying, builds more of the nitrous oxide. It stimulates more of that buildup in the nasal cavity. So it helps with all the benefits that come from with that. And so, yeah, people laugh at it, but there's a reason. Again, like what is like the tradition? I remember back in, you know,
Ohm, exactly. What? That's right there. And if you look at a lot of the old prayers from multiple religions, that like the Catholic Rosemary, Buddhist Rosary. I know that word. and some of the old chants, the Ohms, they encourage you to drop into that slower breath, the in six, out six, in four, out six. But most all of them aim for five to six breaths a minute. Slow it down, relax the body, enter that state consciously. And whether you're doing it for whatever reason, find that reason to slow down and just,
yeah.
And the hum itself, it does increase nitric oxide production. I think it's 15 or 30 seconds of humming. It's not a lot, just a little bit. And it helps generate heat in your body when you breathe, because it's vibrating the intercostal muscles in between the ribs. And as your lungs expand, they pull the heat from those muscles. And now you're helping heat yourself a little more. And I'm not saying mouth breathing doesn't have its place. Know your body. By mouth breathing in certain patterns, I can consciously drop adrenaline into my system when I need it.
Yeah.
But I don't want to drop adrenaline into my system when it's unnecessary. It's a performance-enhancing drug, and it does have side effects. You watch UFC fighters who get nervous before a fight and they're mouth breathing. They have that adrenaline drop, and they walk out shaking and gassed out. And that's no fault of theirs. I've watched professional actors do that before they go on stage. They're breathing too much and they go on stage and they've got that adrenaline drop in their system and they don't have the output for it just yet. And their body's starting to shake. why don't we do that consciously? I'd love it when I'm going up a mountain, if I need a little bit more boost, I'm going to give myself a bit of an adrenaline boost, slow my breathing down, let that work its way through my body and keep on going.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's, knowing how to use your breathing, man. That's one of the, it's something that it seemed like our, ancestors had a much better grasp on. I feel like that's one of the things, it sounds kind of, you know, whatever, but when I'm doing, especially when I'm like deep in a Wim Hof freaking breath hold and like everything's buzzing and you're like flirting with the spirit world, it's like, dude, I feel connected. I feel connected with like my ancestors. You realize like this is something that you share with humans going back probably to the dawn of time. You know, understanding how to use their breathing to bring about different emotional states, different mental states, to regulate mm-hmm. their metabolism, you know, like the Tummo breathing, that's yes. kind of what, you know, the Wim Hof method's based on. But we have just lost, it's such a gift, being connected with our breathing, understanding how to use it. But, you know, like you're saying, like when you look back at ancient traditions, you find it's very eerie how they all kind of arrive, different traditions and different times and different places mm-hmm. all seem to arrive at a basic thing of like 5 to 6 seconds in, 5 to 6 seconds out, you know, about 5 to 6 liters of oxygen a minute. Yeah. You know, the symmetry with it is actually really weird too. When you look at it, it's like, wow, it's like, you know, but yeah, like that tradition, I feel like we've lost, and I feel like Wim, you know, has done, you know, such a great job as kind of like opening our mind to like, oh wow, like we can regain these powers and do these things and control our bodies in ways, like I said, like science says can't do. But one of the things that I wanted to kind of on this note though is inflammation and pain.
Yeah.
And for me personally, one of the biggest things that I've noticed since doing the Wim Hof method is a marked big decrease in my overall body soreness and pain. I'm doing much less mobility work and foam rolling and these things that I would do to address the pain itself.
The
symptom, exactly, and not the actual cause. So yeah, can you explain a little bit more about like kind of what causes some of those things and how the breathing can actually help with that?
So this is a deep rabbit hole, but I'll try not to go off on a tangent. So by breathing in the way we're supposed to breathe throughout your day, in through the nose, out through the nose, with a little bit longer of an exhale to help your body relax, you're holding your CO2 tolerance a little bit higher. You're building your CO2 tolerance. You're actually helping dilate your veins and arteries. You're lowering your blood pressure. So you're lowering your body's overall stress. Stress leads to inflammation. Exercise can lead to inflammation. And by practicing the Wim Hof method once a day in the morning, you're doing that focused hyperventilation. Some people call it superventilation, but you're just breathing more than you need to. And that's what hyperventilation is. You're breathing more than you need to. You're off-gassing that carbon dioxide at more of a rate than we do normally. And say your CO2 level is a little high, not your CO2 level, your body wants to be in balance. So if you're a little more acidic because you're in pain, you're inflamed, your body's a little, it's leaning into that stress category farther than it should. And that's not acceptable. So you do the Wim Hof breath work. Each round, you're off-gassing more CO2. And because carbon dioxide's a mild acid, you're actually helping alkalize your blood temporarily. So you're blowing off one of the things that help makes you inflamed. And so it's pushing the blood to a mild alkalization. So round one, your CO2, your body's pH level's up here, your CO2 levels start up here. And with each successive round, we're dropping the overall CO2 level in our body. We're pushing our blood to that alkaline state temporarily. And we're reducing the body's overall inflammation because we're pushing ourselves deep into that flight or fight state by breathing quickly. We exhale and hold, we build the carbon dioxide back up in between rounds, not as high as it was in the beginning. As the carbon dioxide starts to saturate our system, our veins and arteries are dilating. So right there, you're improving cardiovascular elasticity and strength by actually opening and closing them and exercising them with the breath work. which helps get more blood flow to your bones and muscles and cartilage and all of that. So that helps reduce the inflammation because now you're getting proper blood flow. So you do that, you inhale and hold after that exhale. And because you have more CO2 than you did, because CO2 is what tells you it's time to breathe. That's why you can hold your breath longer throughout each successive breath hold. It's because you have less and less carbon dioxide in your system. At that last breath hold, people can hit 2, 3, 4 minutes. And now we have a lot of CO2. This is why we never practice it in water, because shallow water blackout can happen. It's an unconscious breathe in. So please never do the Wim Hof method near water. You could die. Near, in, around, just don't do it. So by doing that, by breathing in, we're now making ourselves more efficient with the oxygen we have, because we're only giving ourselves one breath. We repeat that 3 to 5 times. So by blowing off more CO2 than we need to, we're helping alkalize the blood, reduce the inflammation. And instead of our nervous system balancing back to that stress point, it balances back to neutral. So your body's already more relaxed, and now it can deal with some of the things that it had before. It's not constantly stressed. It's not constantly working just to maintain that I'm uncomfortable status. And then you couple that with an ice bath or cold exposure, cold shower. That's a huge part of this, because when you take that ice bath, anti-inflammatory endorphins can stay in your bloodstream for up to 6 days. I found for people in chronic pain who are habitually unhealthy, it's more 3 to 4 days. But for someone who's really healthy, 6 days of less inflammation and pain for a 2-minute ice bath. Like, the math there is just a no-brainer. And we're not even talking about the other amazing health benefits you're going to get from taking an ice bath. Learning to meet that stress with a calm breath. Because when you get in the ice, we're pretty much instructing you to adopt an in-4, out-6 breath. Breathe calmly in the stressful space. So you're training yourself to handle stress better and not pull in as much stress naturally. That's going to bring down your inflammation as well. Increasing the blood flow through cardiovascular optimization, taking the ice baths to encourage the anti-inflammatory endorphins, the higher activity of brown fat. Now, we're not quite sure scientifically if we're increasing the amount of brown fat we have in our body through cold exposure, or just making it more effective through cold exposure. But brown fat consumes 5 times more energy than white fat. It eats white fat for energy. And it's just this amazing substance in our body that we have as children, but because we put coats on and we stay comfortable all the time, like anything, it atrophies and becomes less effective when we don't use it. So by actively making ourselves uncomfortable through the breath work, I mean, the breath work shouldn't be uncomfortable. It's pretty amazing. You can hit some pretty amazing places. And then moving into the ice, which isn't the most comfortable feeling in the world. I love how I feel after an ice bath, and I like to be able to hit that calm state in it. But I love how I feel for days after. So by making those hard choices, I'm giving myself an easier life. I'm reducing all of the other root causes of my stress. Chronic inflammation and pain leads to depression, which depression then leads to more chronic pain. So it's this cycle that if you can break that cycle, give yourself that breath and pull yourself out of it, you're treating the root causes of these symptoms. So it's working on your body at that fundamental basic level. Now, you'll hear a lot of people say, well, you can detox and this is how you detox. Well, I don't know if I can prove you detox. The parasympathetic side of the nervous system is the rest, relax, and regenerate. And there's a lot of people who will be doing this breathing and they haven't been breathing correctly. And after 2 weeks, they kind of get flu-like symptoms for a couple days, drink a little more water, you know, stay a little more hydrated, and then it kind of passes. But yeah, there's a lot of pseudoscience around breathwork too. So I know why people are like, why? I don't know. I can be in less pain if I just breathe. Absolutely. But I'm not going to tell you, you can be in less pain when we breathe because you're going to hit some, you know, psychedelic level of understanding. It's just the physiology of what's happening when you breathe correctly. And when you do things for your body that force it to adapt, make it uncomfortable. And athletes do this all the time. You guys train yourselves like, these endurance riders that are riding like hundreds of miles a day, that's not comfortable, but they see a gain from it. That's why they do it. That level of dedication is already there in this group of people. They have that level of dedication and that wherewithal to go for it. So if you're running marathons, you're a distance runner of any kind, you're a mountain biker or a distance biker, you've already got it in you to sit in an ice bath for 2 minutes. You've already got the discipline. And don't tell yourself a story of, oh, I'm not going to do well. So you get out early, get back in. You didn't do well on your bike the first time you got on it. You had training wheels. And if you didn't, well played, I did. it's okay to start at the bottom. Yeah. It's okay to start. And we have to start. Everyone has to start there.
Yes. Yeah. There's a quote from Jake the Dog on Adventure Time that sucking at something is just the first step towards being kind of all right at it.
Yeah, that's great.
So I remind myself of that and tell people that all the time, because it's like, dude, you're going to suck. And that's fine. Like you said, like first time getting a nice bath, it's going to suck. You know, it's the idea of like, man, just if you can just get 1% better. I know it's kind of like a cliche term, you know, but it is. It's like, can you, you know, in the Book of Five Rings, Miyamoto Musashi talked about how today is victory over yourself of yesterday and tomorrow is victory over a lesser foe. It's like, if you can just be a little bit better tomorrow than you were today, that's all you need. That's your goal. And you know, just because people can get in an ice bath and hang out there for 2 minutes, and you jump in and don't last 10 seconds the first time, like, it's okay. You know, like just it's a part of the process. I'm glad you mentioned that, 'cause I think a lot of people expect, like, they see Wim Hof, right? You see Wim fucking doing yoga in the Arctic and diving under, you know, the ice. Yeah. And stuff. And then they're like, dude, I can barely, you know, turn my shower to cold at the end of the shower. Like, I can't do this stuff.
But that's Wim.
Yeah.
I'm not going to compare myself to LeBron James when I go play basketball. I am awful at basketball, but I look even worse. Like, why would I compare myself against the best of the best? I haven't put all of that time and effort he's put in. I haven't trained as much as he has. It's not, that is a unrealistic expectation.
Yeah.
And if I got on a mountain, not expect to be able to keep up with you or even 99% of the crew that listens to you. I guarantee you I couldn't keep up with them. But if I put in the time and the dedication, I'm betting I could.
Yeah. But
it takes that time for everything.
Everything.
And just because you're awesome at one thing doesn't mean you automatically start awesome at another. My favorite, I mean, I was a bartender for 16 years. I'd have people come in and be like, oh, this is easy. And then they'd try it and be like, holy crap, this is really hard. Yeah, it takes time and effort and it takes work. And the same in the theater world. No one just goes out. I mean, yes, there are those random people in every profession who just rock the first time. And we want to kick them in the butt because they make everyone look bad. But they're the outlier.
Yes.
Every new thing takes time. Now, especially if we're talking about something as foundational as breathing. We do this all day. Now trying to bring that breath work into this elite thing you're already good at, that takes time to figure out how to mesh it. So if you're trying to incorporate the nose breathing and mouth breathing into your workout, aim for 75-25, 75 mouth, 25 nose. And then next week or even 2 weeks from now, go for 50-50. Or a month from now. 3 months from now, go for 75-25 nose, mouth. And then at the end, you can be there. But build those incremental steps, step by step, like you said.
Yeah.
And you'll see the benefits. It's hard not to be as excited about breath as I am when, like, I was in excruciating pain all the time. And now I'm not. And will this absolutely work for everybody? No, nothing works for everybody. It doesn't cure anything because I'm still a diabetic. And if you fell off your bike, you'd still have the pain and the injury from the fall. It may not hurt as much, but the injury's still there. You still have to heal properly.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that's, good points, man. It is, like I said, it's, you can get a little woo-woo and stuff around breath work. And that's why some people roll their eyes at it because, like I said, it is transformational, but it's not rocket science. It's not going to, you know, cure your broken bone or like you said, like, you know, you still have diabetes. It's helping manage it, but it's not curing it. I will say one of the things I like about WIM, though, because, you know, you rattled off a lot of things. And just for people that don't know, the benefits for breathing and the inflammation and stuff like that, WIM's actually been tested. Like, he has had universities test him, and he's actually taught his method to other people that they have tested. So they have documented that talking about seeing the inflammatory markers go down, and, you know, these things that Chuck was talking about, these aren't just, that's why he stopped short of like the detox, right? Because maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but we do know, the science does back up that breathing, the Wim Hof method breath work does have these effects on the body, particularly around the immune system and inflammatory markers and things like that. So that's one of the things I love about Wim, is because he's a character, and he's definitely got the hippie vibe, but then he busts out like with the science, you know? So it's not all just woo woo and, you know, chi flow. It's like, hey man, like at the university, they studied me and this is what they found out. And so that's what I really liked about the Wim Hof method, is that it is grounded in actual science, as well as having a really strong foundation in kind of traditional breath work that does have a little bit more of kind of a esoteric side to it, I guess.
Everything can. I mean, mountain biking can have that spiritual side to it when you hit flow state.
Yeah.
When everything's perfect and you find that perfect moment and everything just syncs up, you're there. Like, some people will have that state, some people won't. During the Wim Hof method breathwork, people talk about some people see lights. My wife can see them at will as she's doing the breathwork. She can see these amazing, I have never seen them. I get a ringing in my ears. And that's what I get. Some people see some people don't. And don't chase other people's sensations. Well, that's not useful. And don't try and compete against people like Wim. Don't try and compete against anybody but yourself. This is not a competition to see who can hold their breath longest, because there's other people out there who are holding their breath for 20 minutes already. They're like, I mean, these free divers are amazing. They're like, all right, hold on, let's do this. Boom. And they rock it out. So you can train and aspire to those goals, but don't hold yourself against them.
Yeah.
And if anyone wants to check out the science behind the Wim Hof method, go to wimhofmethod.com under the science tab. All of the studies, you'll see the endotoxin study where they injected Wim with an endotoxin to see if his body would react. If these people got it, they got nauseous. They were sick all day. It was like basically felt like mild grade food poisoning. Wim did it and they're like, nah, it's just you. And he's like, nope, I'll teach some people. And he brought, I think, 18 people to Poland. They picked 12 to do the breath work. All 12 showed no symptoms of the endotoxin in their body. I mean, the endotoxin was in their body, but they were asymptomatic from doing the breath work. And the other people in the control group were not asymptomatic. They were having a rough day. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And before that, science says that was impossible. Right.
Yeah, influencing your autonomic nervous system was supposed to be impossible.
Yep.
And what Wim figured out as he looked at the autonomic nervous system, you know, okay, eyes dilate, eyes constrict. All right. Increased heart rate, lowered heart rate. Okay. Salivation, dry mouth. Okay. Breath faster, breath slower. Oh shit. There it is. By changing the speed of your breath, you can influence your autonomic nervous system. That's something that usually happens unconsciously. That's why it's called autonomic. Now you can put control into that. You can focus on your breath and influence that within yourself. And yeah. I mean, it was amazing that it's like the first person who ran the 4-minute mile. People thought it was impossible. But once one person did it and people were like, oh, that is possible. Multiple people did it. And it's the same for this we didn't know. So we didn't know, but now we do. What else don't we know?
Yeah.
So
what else don't we know?
And Wim will say things that people are like, that is off the wall. That can't be true. And a couple of years later, they're like, oh, he was right about that.
There's the science. Yeah.
There's this, there's the backup. And you know, if we waited for science to back every, and I'm not saying I love science. I'm a type one diabetic. I live off insulin. Like I'm all for research and development. I'd be dead without it. But it doesn't tell us everything. And
right.
So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying deny science. Absolutely. Like look at what they're doing and see what it says. But if, you know, you want to try and push your body in a new way, try and push your body in a new way. See what happens. Don't hurt yourself. Don't go like skinny dipping in a boiling pool. That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Use common sense.
There's definitely limits, but you know, like I said at the beginning, science, for as much as it's helped us in some ways, it limits us as well, because it has a tendency to tell you, you can't do this. Like we couldn't run a 4-minute mile. It's supposed to be physically impossible.
Right.
Science had it all worked out, like why it was physically impossible for you to run a 4-minute mile. And then Roger Bannister does it, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I guess that isn't physically impossible. And have you read the book Deep, James Nestor's other book on the freedivers?
Yes.
Dude, that was another one, man. Like that made me like just reading some of the like the descriptions of like the contest and the attempts and stuff. Like I'm sitting there in my house, like all perfectly safe and dry, and I'm still like clutching up, like, but you're reading that, and
your mind is
exactly, you know, you can put yourself, but the weird thing is that it was another one of those, you're reading that and you're like, dude, what have we lost? Like I remember it just kind of my wife's from Hawaii, the island of Kauai, and we lived there for a few years, and I worked for a tour company mainly doing like kind of a mountain bike type tour, but every once in a while we go on a snorkel tour. And we had this one area where we'd go to where the turtles were. It was a little protected cove from the tiger sharks, so the turtles would come in there. And it was about like 20 some odd feet deep, which is deep enough that like it takes a little bit of practice and skill. Like the first time you dive down that deep, your ears are hurting. You can't hold your breath that long. And by the time, you know, after doing it for a while, I remember I have this vision in my head. It's so distinct. I remember, you know, diving down there and hanging out on the bottom, and there's this turtle like 4 feet away. And we're just looking at each other, like locked eyes, like looking at each other. And it was just such a surreal thing. And reading that book Deep brought me back to that moment and going like, oh yeah, my body had started to adapt and do these things. And like how he talked about how, you know, scuba diving is like going for a hike with a weed or like a leaf blower. It's like, it's you're creating so much noise and so much disruption. Like nobody wants to hang out with you. And so, but when you're down there with just free diving, holding your breath, you're on their terms. And like, totally, that turtle never would have hung out and looked at me if I had a scuba tank on. I dive down there and I'm hanging out. But anyways, I know this is totally off subject, but
it's completely on subject. Actually, it's completely on subject because free divers, this is another space where they train themselves to meet stress with calm. It doesn't work well for you, but free diving, you have to be calm. You have to be centered. You want conscious control of your heart rate, because the faster your heart is beating, the more oxygen you're using, the less time you're going to be able to stay down. So find whatever experience you need to find, whether it's the Wim Hof method, whether it's free diving, free driving, totally different, way less stress. Find someone to teach you. Don't just try this stuff by yourself. You could get hurt. But find that difficult thing to embrace the calm in. Treat yourself to it. Learn to meet stress with calm. And free divers, they're going deep and they're staying calm and they're doing amazing things. But even reading about it is stressful. You're like, oh my, what the hell are they doing? And they're not freaked out. Why should you be?
Right.
This. And in scuba too, panic is death. If someone's panicking underwater and you've got extra air in their tank and you can share with them and you've got enough to get to the top and they're panicking, they might bring you down if you get too close. I mean, in all of these places, you have to meet that stress with that calm place. Now imagine if you're performing in a race, the guy's just ahead of you and you start to stress out because you want to overtake them. That's not going to help. But what if you calm your breath down, you focus and you see yourself overtaking them and you relax into it and you go past it.
Yeah.
And even to hit the cliche of the movie scene, that guy making his break at the end, he's never going, he just hits that zone, enters flow state, and goes for it.
So yeah.
finding a way to stay calm or calmer than your opponent in that place. Like, I mean, if you look at Jordan when he plays, man, the guy is an artist. And you didn't see him freaking out with his eyes wide on the court. He saw all the moves. Watching Larry Bird, too. I use basketball references a lot because these guys, I love watching how they react on the court. And you could see other people getting stressed out. I mean, tennis players do it, too. You see the ones start to lock up, get mad between matches. They're going to lose. Yeah. I mean, McEnroe may be the exception to that rule. It seemed to help him the more pissed off he got. But that might have been his superpower.
He's probably upsetting the other people more, man. You know, like you can't help but get a little nervous when somebody's freaking out around. It's just human nature. So that may have been his ploy there, man. Like, act so psycho, but make everybody else nervous.
Even rolling in jiu-jitsu, whoever, yeah. You know, one of my clients, he says, you know, he's been doing this for a year now. And he says, I know I've won when they breathe through their mouth first.
I started noticing that, man. Totally started noticing that. I'll like, you know, yes, I have, that's become a goal of mine, is to break their breathing first. Mm-hmm. If I can break their breathing, then it's like, it's easier to break the rest of them. So yeah, it's like, I'm not trying to go for a submission or, you know, whatever. It's like, I'm just trying to keep moving and keep you moving. And then when I notice, like, oh, you're mouth breathing, buddy. Okay. Now's the time to start going for what I want. And same thing on the trail, like you're saying, like you can same thing with, you know, man, if you're riding next to somebody and their breathing is like just way faster than yours, you know, like, man, you can just turn up the heat just a little bit and you'll break them because like their breath is broken. Mm-hmm. And then it's, everything else is going to break. It's easier to break everything else after that. But as long as someone's got their breath under control, man, it's a lot harder to break them mentally and physically, which is what we should be aiming for as athletes.
Well, and I mean, when we're in high states of emotion, and that's happiness, sadness, joy, anger, rage, we're losing about a third of our mental capacity.
Yeah.
And when you start to stress out while you're performing or competing, whether you're in a match or on a mountain, as soon as you let those emotions, why would I want to give up a third of my mental capacity? I want to try and keep that as long as possible. And if their breath breaks, they're already stressing themselves out. It's that much easier to just give them that little, as you said, turn that heat up, just that push.
Yeah.
So don't allow people to give you that push.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You know, if you know it, this works two ways. It's like, you know what they may be trying to do to you. And then you know what to do to them. And yeah. So, yeah, it's super powerful stuff, man. But, well, cool. I see, I've taken about an hour of your time, brother. And I really, I appreciate, I know you'll go all day, man, which is, we're the same, man. Just, you know, with me with training and you with breathing, just wind us up and point us in a direction and we will go. But, man, we've covered a lot of stuff here. Before we go, I do want to ask you real quick about mouth taping. You mentioned it once. I will say that for me personally, that's probably been one of the things that's helped the most as far as like getting my nose to start working better, because I tried the oxygen advantage and I tried doing the nose breathing, but I didn't do the mouth taping and I just kind of abandoned it. Mm-hmm. And I'd say like that's probably the one thing that I've noticed since I started doing the mouth taping. I feel like it's really helped my nose open up and helped my nasal breathing a lot. And so if you could just touch on that real quick before we go, because I think that's one of these tips that if people listening to this, if you did nothing else but started taping your mouth at night, I really think it'd make a big difference in your overall health and breathing and well-being.
Oh, absolutely true. Absolutely true. So if you're breathing through your mouth all night long, as I said, mouth breathing is like being chased by the world's slowest bear if you're just doing it at rest. So imagine sleeping, but telling your body to stress out. That's not as restful as it can be. Now, people will say, isn't taping extreme? And it's not extreme when you tape your fingers together because you broke them, or you immobilize your arm in a sling because it needs to be immobilized. All the tape is doing is immobilizing your mouth so you can't use it improperly at night while you sleep. And so Patrick McEwen invented this stuff called Myotape, MYOTAPE.com. If you have facial hair, it doesn't really work because it sits around the mouth and it holds it shut with pressure. I use mouth tape at night. I put it on my mouth before I go to bed, and it just forces me to breathe through my nose. Now, if you have a deviated septum or some other physiological problem that comes with this, you're going to have to see a doctor, an ear, nose, throat specialist. You're going to have to work with somebody. But for everyone else out there, tell your body to relax when you're sleeping. You'll have a deeper well of emotional patience, and it just have that relaxing, regenerative sleep. So by as I said, taping your mouth shut, you're going to have a higher saturation of CO2 in your blood while you sleep, which means your veins and arteries are going to be dilated a little bit more. Your heart rate's going to drop. Your blood pressure's going to drop. It's just better for you. Now, also, you're going to stay hydrated throughout the night more, because you're not getting rid of so much water with each exhale. And when you wake up in the morning, the reason it's so helpful is if you slept for 6 to 8 hours or 9 or however long you want to sleep, you're using your nose like you're supposed to. How you sleep at night is going to inform how you sleep during the day. If you sleep 8 hours a day, and we're breathing, we'll say 21,000 times a day, just for easy math's sake, that's 7,000 breaths at night alone. It should be much slower than that. And if you tape your mouth, it will be. But give yourself the chance to recover. Use the tool that you have on your face to recover while you sleep. And use tape that you can take off easy. It doesn't have to cover your whole mouth. You can do a postage stamp size right over the front of your lips. You can do two strips on the side. You can do the Myotape, which covers around your mouth. You can do these surgical cloth tape strips that you just put on your lips. They don't leave any stickum. I'm not saying use like duct tape or, you know, electrical tape or scotch tape. Don't use that stuff. Use medical grade surgical tape. Use the stuff that's meant for that. Don't be like, I tried duct tape like you said, my face is all red and hurts. Yeah, no, I didn't say use duct tape. Don't do that. But tape your mouth when you sleep. Do the right thing for yourself. And if you have to take it off the first week because it makes you uncomfortable, take it off. That's okay. But try it. It's not as extreme as you think.
No.
And before you try it at bed, try it for an hour while you're awake. Get used to the feeling. Don't just be like, well, it's time for bed. Wow, this is weird. I can't sleep now. There's something on my face. Yeah. Practice before you need it. And it's the same with the breath and the ice. If you're going to take an ice bath and you want to get in there, practice the in four, out six before you need it. So you have it when you have it. And the same for when you're attempting a hill. Breathe in anticipation of what you'll need to do. Just make yourself more aware of your breath.
Yeah.
And it'll absolutely, you'll see returns. You can't not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought it sounded horrible. I'd read about the mouth taping before, and dude, my nose was so bad. Like, honestly, I had thoughts that, like, if I had one of those things, like somebody broke in my house and gagged me, like, I might suffocate. Like, there were honestly times when I thought, like, I might fucking die if somebody, like, gagged my mouth, because I can't breathe through my nose. Like, my nose is so jacked up and so stopped up most of the time. Like the thought of taping my mouth made me panicky, because I'm like, it just sounded horrible. But like I said, the thought of developing sleep apnea or having to get a CPAP machine, you know, not there's anything wrong with that, right? If that's what I needed to do. But like, I was like, man, I am really kind of desperate. And so if the mouth taping is what it takes, and I remember in the book, Breath James Nestor was talking about it, and the doctor that he was talking to, she said, like, man, my first night I barely made it 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, by the end of the week I was sleeping through the whole night. And I was like, okay, all right, well, maybe I'll try it. And I just do a little postage stamp piece of, I actually just use scotch tape. It seems to work fine. Just, you know, tape the little bit there, and it works freaking wonders. And it's nowhere near as bad as it sounds. Before you try it. But yeah, it's super powerful. The one thing that surprised me too is that how it influences how often you have to get up to go to the bathroom, how mouth breathing releases a hormone that signals your kidneys that you got to go pee. And
it's because it's expecting you to be running from something. It can't have an extra weight there. It needs the freedom to flee.
Yeah. So again, I was starting to think like, fuck, man, am I starting to get like an enlarged prostate or something? Like, I got to get up several nights, you know, times of the night to go pee. And like, it made me wonder, like, how many people in this country don't have a prostate problem? They got a fucking mouth breathing problem, but they're like, you know, they're taking saw palmetto and all this other crap because they think it's that. But mm-hmm. yeah, like, I don't get up at night at all anymore. I don't have to go to the bathroom. I don't wake up thirsty. It has been profound, the difference yeah. in my sleep and how that's affected other things. So, yeah, man, mouth taping, people do it.
The one thing I'm going to say to people out there who are like, it sounds too easy. It sounds too easy. And to all of you out there who tell me it sounds too easy, why aren't you doing it if it's so easy? If it's that easy and it should, it can't be that easy. Well, then prove me wrong by doing it. Please, please just do it. If it's that easy, just do it. Because I hear, it can't be that easy. Well, did you try? Just try. And will this work for everybody? Nothing ever works for everybody. Find the thing that works best for you. But breathing correctly has profound effects. Like, I mean, I never thought of that. How many people have a breathing problem and not a prostate problem?
Yeah.
That's huge. With children, ADHD shares a lot of the symptoms of sleep deprivation.
Yep.
Kids mouth breathing at night and not breathing through their nose. Will this fix every kid with ADHD? Nope, but it'll sure help.
Yeah. Yeah. No, if you haven't read that book, Breath, man, I can't recommend that book enough. Like, just when you get done reading it, it scares you. Like, you're actually frightened for like, holy crap. Like, what have I been doing to myself for the last, you know, for me, 44 years? and how can I start? You know, I got kids. I know you got a couple of kids as well. Yep. And it's like, okay, now I got to start. What can I do to make sure that they don't get suffer from the same, fate that I did and have to learn this stuff late in life. But yeah, read that book, which kind of leads us to a good spot. That book's a great resource. Your website is
icedvikingbreathworks.com. Yeah.
Viking Breath Works. Sorry. Yes.
So go, you can find me on Instagram is a much better place to find me at Iced Viking Breath Works.
Okay.
I wish I could say I'm social media savvy, but it's like I do my breathwork sessions and I just put them there for people who want them. I'm not, my website's kind of broken. I'm trying to get someone to fix it, but it's.
It's harder to get people to take your money than you think. It's really amazing. Especially people that can do good work.
The people that can do good work are working.
Yeah. I run into the same problem myself often. But you also have a Monday night meetup. One of the things that I do encourage people to go to your website because they can sign up for that is you host a Monday evening Zoom session where you lead people through 4 rounds of Wim Hof breathing, and you can drop your email in the chat and he will send you a copy of that recording. So then you can use it. I've got a little collection going of Chuck's recordings from his Monday night sessions, but I recommend checking out that because it's he does a great job.
It's always free.
Yes. It's a great resource. If you're not taking advantage of it, shame on you. So, I checked out, and then like Chuck had said, the WimHofMethod.com or WimHofMethod.com to learn more about the Wim Hof Method. And Wim, he's actually got a free app that you can download that has a lot of great resources. I really recommend watching the little mini intro course where he talks about how to do the breathing, how to do the ice bath, some of those little safety things that you want to keep in mind. And then on that app, he's got a guided bubble breathing. Thing. And so like Wim himself will lead you through it. So you can start checking out this breathwork stuff, especially the Wim Hof Method stuff for free. Like I said, like Chuck does them. You can go online and find them. Wim's got a bunch of stuff. So there's really no excuse at all for you to not, tape is cheap.
Yeah.
Starting to learn about Wim Hof method is free.
Breath is free. You come breath with it. You free. Come equipped with it every day.
Yes. Yes. So there's really no excuse to not start to start your own breathwork journey and figuring out how to improve your, and really your physical, your mental, your spiritual health, like everything, will benefit from better breath work. And Chuck, I really appreciate the work that you're doing and helping to lead the charge, you know, in this area and helping to educate people, man. So, yeah, appreciate you and your time, brother.
My privilege and pleasure, sir. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So, cool. I guess we can, go ahead and wrap this up. I don't know if you have any other words of wisdom or things for people before we part, before we end the recording, but,
be nice to yourself. Give yourself a little bit of a break. If you start your breathwork journey, you're starting any new thing and you fail amazingly well, get back up again and keep trying. The fail doesn't define who you are.
No.
And you've got to give, when they say give people unconditional love, that counts for you as well. So
yeah.
Give yourself that bit of care. Just basically be well and breathe deep.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's great advice. We'll leave it at that. And yeah, so we'll go with this. I'm sure anybody's got any questions or whatever, hit me up. We'll see if we can get Chuck on later podcast, maybe talk about some specific protocols for like pre-competition and
you know,
how to apply breathing to strength and cardio workouts and stuff. So there was a lot of specific stuff that we can dig into as well, but I think we did a really good job of covering the basics, man, and hopefully piquing people's interest and into checking out breath work and how it can help them out. So cool, man. Well, right on. I appreciate it. Again, guys,
thank
check out
so
Chuck
much.
I'll have the links with this podcast. And yeah, it's been my pleasure. And I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording here. And then, yeah, and I will talk to everybody next time. See you guys.